Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, Richard and I go to our mailbag. We spend time answering the questions that you have sent in. Some we can answer, some we have great answers to, and some we have not a clue. But let's get started and see what we have today. First question. I want a drawing at a local casino for $1,000. When I went to claim it, they insisted on having my social security number, even though it was less than $1,200. If I didn't give them the social security number, they wouldn't give me the money. So I did. Was this right? And my answer was, yes, it is right. The $1,200 amount you refer to is the amount for the W-2G, which is a form given to you when you hit jackpots of a certain size. Winning a drawing, you're issued a form 1099. But on occasion, I've been issued a W-2G on a drawing instead. Now, the 1099 has the annual threshold of $600. At many casinos, any size drawings, even say $50, is subject to your social security number being collected on the theory that the $600 is an annual threshold. So $50 in February added to $300 in June and another $250 in September, that requires a 1099. Other casinos do not ask you for the social security number unless the individual drawing amount is at least $600. While I do not believe this is a proper reading of the code, if they don't want to issue a 1099, that's their problem and not yours. Both W-2Gs and 1099s need to be included on your tax return. See your accountant for more information.
Yeah, and the problem also is often the casino does not really understand what the rules are. So I hit one of these one time. And not only did they want my social security number, they insisted that I have my social security card. And I said, who carries their social security card around with them? That's ridiculous. But they would not pay me until I presented a card. And I happened to be in Fresno at the time. So I had to go to the local Social Security office in Fresno and have them get me a duplicate card, which took a couple of days or something. So, sometimes there's just no arguing with stupidity.
Very good. Next letter. Love the Gambling with an Edge show. What would you recommend on reading books about roulette and baccarat? Thanks.
roulette, I would recommend a couple of books. There's a good book by Russell Barnhart, and the title of that book I've forgotten, but we will look it up, and it'll be in the show notes. And then there's also a really interesting book called The Eudaimonic Pie, about some guys and their attempt to beat roulette using computers. So that's it for roulette.
Lawrence Scott.
Oh, yeah, Lawrence Scott. Yeah, who's been on the show. And you can listen to a couple of episodes of his. Also, Mark Billings, we had an episode where he talked about roulette as well. So, yeah, we have a couple of Lawrence Scott episodes and a couple of Mark Billings episodes. Mark Billings also had a book about roulette, but it's out of print. And that was about how to detect bias roulette wheels. Baccarat, there's not really anything out there.
Unless you're talking about baccarat side bets.
I don't know any books. I mean, are there any side bets covered in Grosjean's book?
I don't know. Grosjean will not let me have a copy of it. So I have not mastered that book by any stretch of the imagination.
I think that book came out before all the baccarat side bets hit the tables. So there might be something in there about side bets. But I don't remember.
Yeah, and on the off chance, if the player was talking about just reading about roulette and baccarat as a gambler rather than a winning player, our recommendation basically about roulette is don't.
Yeah.
It's even the wheel with two zeros on it is a 5.25% against you. Even the wheels with 1 0 against you, well, 1 0 is half that. In baccarat, it's a decent play. It's something like 1% against you. So if you insist on gambling without any kind of knowledge about it, go ahead. Playing the bank all the time is a smarter bet than playing the house or switching back and forth. You're taking the worst of it, but if you're just playing as a gambler, that's the best shot. The next question didn't come from a player, but rather a slot director at somewhere I play. It's important, appropriate for this forum, so here goes. I've had a number of customers ask me about what banks in Las Vegas are gambler-friendly, meaning they understand how a professional gambler is an actual profession and such. Banks would be used to multiple deposits, withdrawals, etc., in varying amounts and timings. Can you recommend a bank or credit union? Richard.
Wow. No, I can't. What I can say is that Chase and Wells Fargo have been particularly bad to people who make large cash deposits and withdrawals, and going to your safe deposit box too often is another thing that'll get you barred from the bank. So I would avoid Chase and Wells Fargo, but I don't have one I recommend. I mean, you just have to be kind of careful about the number of times you make large cash deposits and withdrawals, because any bank, I think, is eventually going to bar you, unless you... I mean, one thing you might try would be a credit union where you can go in and try to meet your banker. And yes, establish a personal relationship.
Yes.
That might be helpful, but yeah.
Now, for me, I don't have a list of banks. I don't disagree with anything Richard said, although multiple deposits are less of a problem than multiple withdrawals.
Often banks don't have enough cash to give you, depending on how much you're trying to withdraw.
But if you want to deposit cash, they usually are able to handle that. But on a personal basis, I keep a supply of cash in safety deposit boxes around town and use lines of credit at casinos. This means I forego some interest on cash, but I avoid having to make many withdrawals. When I hit a sizable jackpot, whether I take cash or check depends on my cash balances in various places. Banks are always willing to take deposits, and certainly check deposits, but it's frequent withdrawals that sometimes they get concerned about. If I need some cash and don't wish to go to the bank, I'll plan to make a sizable play at one of the casinos where I have a line of credit. Let's say I take a $20,000 marker. I'll plan to play about $80,000 coin in and pay off the marker by check the same day, whether I win or lose. If I lose more than that, I'll take another marker. This will leave me with cash on hand without having to withdraw from a bank. Yes, there's some variance, meaning sometimes I win and sometimes I lose. And sometimes the promotions aren't the very best, so I'm a slight dog in that gambling that much. But I'm in the gambling business and I'm used to these kind of swings. I also have money in more than one bank account at separate banks. So when those losing streaks occur that I need to withdraw and I don't wish to go the line of credit route, I'll withdraw from the bank I haven't withdrawn from recently. That keeps my withdrawals as being flagged as frequent because one bank doesn't talk to another. Finally, whether it's a safe deposit or a bank account, I have a fairly large position in cash rather than having the money invested somewhere. To me, this is a cost of doing business. How large is fairly large depends on the player, of course. Players who play progressive need larger bankrolls than those who don't. Players who play $5 machines need larger bankrolls than those who play 25-cent machines. Players who play triple-double need larger bankrolls than those who play jacks or better. If it comes to it, I also have money invested in the stock market and other places. I can always generate the money by selling stocks or bonds. I'd rather not go this route, but it's a safety net if I need it. All right, another question. I'm in a National Football League pool with 70-plus people, $10 weekly buy-in, pick 5 games a week against the spread. Whoever goes 5 for 5 splits the pot. It's average 1 winner per week, so the winner usually takes about $700. A $10 5-team parlay only pays $250. So does this pool have a higher EV? Is there an optimal strategy?
Well, yeah, of course it has a higher EV because there's no VIG on the pool, right? I mean, so casinos build VIG into every bet that you make. And so here's a bet you can make with no VIG. So if you're a monkey throwing darts at the board, you're going to break even long run. But I'm wondering if the spread is stale. So you can have a considerable edge if they post the line, you know, at the beginning of the week, and you can wait until Saturday night to make your bets and see where the line has moved, and you're still betting into the stale line. I mean, so I don't know the answer to that question, but if so, you could have a sizable edge.
Another thing is, assuming against the spread is a 50-50 proposition, 5 out of 5 is 1 in 32 chances. If you have 70-plus people in your pools, there are typically going to be 2 or 3 winners, not just one. Sports betting is not my thing. I don't have a recommendation on an optimal strategy. I can tell you for the last 3 weeks, you should not have bet on the Cowboys, but I can't tell you what's going to happen the next 3 weeks. In general, it's better to be a contrarian. If you think most people will be taking one particular side in the game, take the other. It's still 50-50, but if you win and have to split the prize, you'll be splitting with fewer people. All right, another question. Blackjack player. He says, obviously, betting and playing based strictly on the count is sound advice. What about the time using high-low in a shoe game and the count rises suddenly? For example, the round starts at -4 running count and ends up at +4 running count. It's maybe the third round in a 6-deck shoe, so it could be rounded to a true 1. I would certainly do that, but what about being more aggressive? Betting and even using the index plays for +2, since we just saw a run of 8 or more small cards rather than big ones. Is there any logic to this, or is it just a more elaborate version of playing a streak? In other words, BS. As a non-blackjack player, non-blackjack expert, I think it is BS. Richard, you're far more expert at it than I am. What do you think?
Yeah, it's BS. It's superstition or voodoo thinking or whatever. So the count is based on the ratio of tens to non-tens left in the deck, and it doesn't matter whether a bunch of little cards all came out at one time or didn't come out at one time or any of that. The count is the count, and you know, our brains are hardwired to recognize patterns.
Yes.
But those patterns don't mean anything. So just stick with the numbers.
Yeah, it's like you won 3 days in a row, so you know you're hot, so you increase your bets.
No, you know you're due for a loss.
well, there's a couple different theories there. All right. They're equally BS. All right. So this is for Richard. He's playing a video blackjack machine. Single deck. hits 17s, 8-17, excuse me. 5-2 blackjack, 6-card Charlie.
6-card full win or half win. Well, either one. Go ahead.
Yeah, he did not. And he did, said, Charlie, what does Charlie think? Charlie's not here. So the question is, should he memorize the 6-card Charlie rules or composition-dependent single deck? Which one overrides the other?
Oh, I would guess that the 6-card Charlie, even if it's 6-card half win, would be worth much more than the single deck composition strategy. So, but there are a few there are a few single deck composition dependent strategies that you can that will cover a lot of what little gain you're going to get from the composition dependent strategies, right? So knowing
like a 3-card 16 versus a 10, is that what we're talking
about?
Yeah,
or 9-7 versus 10-6, that kind of thing. You know, so if you just look at a couple of those, like the 16s in particular, you know, those are easy to remember. But the 6-card Charlie rule would be worth more than the composition dependent. At least I think. I haven't looked it up. So, but that would be my suspicion.
And my suspicion is that Richard's suspicions are right on. Another question. Question on taxes in the new tax law. For background, this refers to someone who does not file as a professional gambler. My understanding is that with the new tax law, the standard deduction is much higher. So as a result, someone who gets a few W-2Gs isn't going to go over the threshold where it makes sense to itemize. What about someone who gets a lot of them, though, over the amount of the standard deduction? In that situation, there really isn't a change because they're still going to be able to deduct losses up to the amount of the win. Personally, I've always had a pretty expensive mortgage and paid a lot of mortgage interest, and that put me where itemizing made sense. But he no longer owns, and the mortgage interest rate, I think, is gone anyway from the tax law. I can probably claim head of household as I have a child and divorced. I see the standard deduction for head of household is $18,000, but I definitely get more than that in W-2Gs. What should I do? So my answer, what you say sounds right, but I'm not a tax expert. I don't know if we're going to be able to get tax expert Russell Fox on in the near future before he's swamped with income tax stuff in the new year. We haven't approached him recently, but there might be enough stuff for him. Richard?
You know, we have another question sort of about this, where a guy said basically he stopped playing because of the tax situations.
Yes.
So one of the problems with getting a lot of W-2Gs and not filing as a professional gambler, yes, you can write off the losses, but the problem is it affects your adjusted gross income. And which does things to your subsequent year. And my understanding is that that's bad, that it screws you in many ways. So, we need a tax expert. But my feeling is if I was generating, that I would not want to generate a lot of W-2Gs if I wasn't not just itemizing, but filing as a professional.
So the other question that Richard was referring to is somebody wanted to know what are the future prospects of raising jackpot wins triggering a W-2G from $1,200 to a higher, more reasonable level, say $5,000 to $10,000, and does the gambling industry have any impetus towards this end? Now, first of all, there's no impetus for this. Changing W-2Gs from 1,200 to 5,000 only means because you're supposed to pay taxes on a jackpot of $50. So people who only pay on W-2Gs are avoiding taxes where legally they shouldn't. The government has no impetus to let you avoid taxes easier. They want to increase their tax revenue, not decrease it. A few years ago, they wanted to put the W-2G limit down to $600. They want more money from these sinful gamblers. In taxes in general, you want to tax the other guy's vices. And if you're the one with that vice, if you can call this a vice, it hurts. But for everybody else, it makes a lot of sense. If you're a non-smoker, doesn't bother you at all if the smoking rates go up. If you are a smoker, it pisses the hell out of you. So
yeah, I mean, there is the gambling industry would love to raise that to 5,000 or 10,000 or get rid of it altogether, just yes, because it's a ton of paperwork, yes, and hassle for them. But they're not going to spend their hard-earned lobbying dollars on that when they can, you know, spend it on other things, you know, like expanding sports betting and online gambling and things that'll make them more money.
Yeah, in the near future, of course, our Congress is busy with other interesting headline events, such as we'll talk about it in predictit.org commercial. But and then there is no chance they're going to take up a new tax bill. They had to compromise quite a bit to get the last one done, and there's just very little chance to have another one. Someone else wants to know, is there any difference between double-double bonus 9-6 in one casino and double-double bonus 9-6 in another casino? The answer is, the game itself is essentially the same, usually. Sometimes a straight flush and the low four of a kinds pay $239 instead of $250. This was geared for $5 machines because 239 coins comes out to be $11.95, and that avoids a W-2G tax form. Casinos are allowed to put that pay schedule on any denomination they want. You can have it on nickels. But this option lowers the 98.98% of 9-6 double-double to 98.59. So that's a 0.4%. The game can come in progressive versions where the progressive is on any number of categories. You could have it on, you always would have it on the Royal, but you could also have it on aces with a kicker, aces without a kicker, twos, threes, and fours with a kicker, twos, threes, and fours without a kicker, straight flush, etc. In Mississippi, W2Gs come with a non-refundable 3% state fee. This means that the return on a 9-6 double-double for dollars in Mississippi is not the same percentage as a 25-cent game or a $5 game, simply because of this non-refundable fee. In New York racinos, the games are not fairly dealt because the state uses video poker games to help balance their budget. In these racino, a game that looks like a 99% game may actually be closer to 93%. And it's legal because the ripoff is sponsored by the state.
But two games in Nevada would both be the same game, assuming the pay schedules are the same.
Yes. Again, it depends. Intelligently considering whether to play here or there depends on the slot clubs and the promotions and the mailers, comps, stuff like that. And it can be a very intelligent play to play 9-6 jacks at one casino and a very stupid play to play, 9-6 double-double at one casino because the promotions are adding 2%. And very stupid play to play it at another casino because the promotions aren't adding anything. So, but yes, the game is the same, but the gambling opportunity can be different. This question is from a lady. Although what she says, my father would not call her a lady. He defines ladies differently. But she says, I absolutely loved your novel, Sex, Lies, and Video Poker. And
oh,
more
come on.
Sex
lies. This isn't a real letter.
but it is. It is, and I did not do it. So the question is, are you planning on writing a third part to complete the trilogy? I really, really hope so. She put two reallys in there and two exclamation points, so it has to be real. So I'm thanking you for the praise. I've thought about it now and then, but probably not. If there is a video poker, if there's a market for video poker sex novels, I haven't really tapped into it. I have sold some, and I have made probably 5 or 6 cents an hour on those books, but going through. And if I did a third one, I don't know where I would pick up. The last one was written in, it took place in about 2003, which is 16 years ago.
When so the new one could take place in a senior center.
Could be. They could do their walkers and go to the casinos. That might be interesting, but somehow might have to change the titles. Someone who's 72 years old, I can tell you that sex is different at 72 than it was at 22. Someone wants to know if he could sell an AP course about beating slots. Would that be something people would pay for? Something like $500. He says he lives in a country where there are not many educated gambling resources, and there are a lot of small bar casinos, and everybody is just playing slots. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think people would pay for that. I mean, assuming that you actually have an edge, that you're, and $500 sounds pretty cheap. If Mickey Krim were going to teach a course on beating slots, I think he could charge a lot more than $500 and get a lot of people who would want to pay to learn. So, but I don't know this particular situation. I mean, if this is a guy in some country where he's going to teach him to, you know, look for the lucky machine or the one that didn't hit for 3 hours or something, well, yeah, I don't think that'll do very well. So it just depends on what you're actually selling.
Yeah, and I don't know what country he's in, and I certainly don't know the buying habits of those people. I can speculate that there will be relatively few people interested in playing intelligently and a lot more people interested in doing it for fun. So, and I can tell you that writing how to play intelligent video poker has not been particularly profitable to me, and I'm probably the top guy in the business of selling video poker information, and including everything, I've made less than $5 an hour from writing. Now, although the time spent has improved my knowledge, and the extra knowledge means I play the games better and I forget less than other people who don't review as often as I do to write these damn articles. But if you are a nobody going in, where nobody means somebody that doesn't have a name and it's just Joe Blow writes this book, it's hard to get people to buy a book by Joe Blow as opposed to somebody famous.
Well, again, he's not talking about a book. He's talking about doing a seminar. But your point is valid. I mean, if he's just nobody, then, yeah, why should we take your course? By the way, I mentioned Mickey Krim, and I just want to say our thoughts and well wishes go out to him. He had a heart attack recently, and he is recovering, but I saw recently that the doctors said that he couldn't go out on the road, which he doesn't like being told that. But anyway, so we hope he does well. We've had him on the show. You can go listen to a couple of his episodes. And, good luck for a speedy recovery.
Yeah. Definitely. Ditto. The Mickey has led an interesting life. He's extremely knowledgeable. Most of it he figured out himself. He also had some destructive habits. So I hope he recovers well. Here's a question on Sportsbook. Somebody has a free play bonus in the Sportsbook where winning wagers are only credit the winnings and not the risk portion. Losing wagers results in a law of that free play amount. What's the optimal strategy?
Wait, losing results in a what of the free play?
And a loss of that free play amount. So let's say it's $20. If you bet $20 on the Cowboys and lose, you've lost the $20.
You lose the bonus.
If you bet it on the team and they win, and you're betting $20, and it's a 30 to pay 20 or $30. So you
three
would
to two.
Then you would presumably get credit for betting $10, and so you would still have another $10 worth of winnings to collect. So I didn't know exactly, but my main thing is I have no idea what he's talking about. And
what was the actual question?
What's the optimal strategy?
Oh, okay. Well, so it depends on what kind of bonus it is. So this sounds like an internet bonus, or often there are these kind of bonuses on the internet. And it depends on whether it's what they call a sticky bonus or not. Which means basically, can you cash out that money or does the bonus go away if you win? Anyway, if you just Google Beyond Coupons, there's an article by James Grosjean about how to bet all these different kinds of coupons, and that'll answer the question. Because it really just depends on what kind of bonus it is and what the rules are around it.
Yes, that's good advice. We're going to take a brief break for some commercials, and then we'll be back with lots more listener questions. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In December, between the 15th and 24th, everything is half price if you use your points. This is an annual promotion from the end of the NFR rodeo to Christmas Eve. This is an excellent time to go to Michael's, which is a superb restaurant that is rather expensive. Also for locals, Bonnie and I get together with a number of other friends and go to primarily prime rib. We have plenty of points and we pass on the half price to everybody. So if you have a group that wants to find a place to go out, half price meals are a good way to go. Next semester of free video poker classes begins Tuesday, January 14th. First class will be Jacks or Better. The class schedule is posted now on bobdancer.com. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. There are a number of different bets on whether Trump will be impeached within various time periods, who the Democratic nominee will be, who will be forced to testify, etc. Gamblers with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. Rich and I have received a check from predicted.org for which we're thankful. We're thankful for our readers for going and signing up for this. I'm personally interested in politics, find the site fascinating, and watching the numbers choose. A couple months ago, I said, it looked to me like the smart bet would be that Trump would not be impeached by the end of the year. Now, that price has changed quite a bit.
Yeah, because that price was, what, 60 or 70 back then?
It was. I took a bath on it. I'm out of the position now, and now it looks like he will be
So what did you, just out of curiosity, what did you buy in at and what did you get out at?
I don't have the numbers in front of me. I lost $7.
No, but I mean, how big a position?
I don't have that number.
Oh, okay.
It was a while ago I got out. But it was interesting to get in and get out.
Right. So just to explain for the listeners, each contract is based on $1, right? So it might be 73 cents on the yes and 27 cents on the no. So if you buy the no, you spend 27 cents. And then when it settles at $1. So you would make, you know, 73 cents at the end. But you can, the prices change, fluctuate, and you can buy in or out just like a, you know, an option contract.
BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful at counting cards at blackjack. They have a number of training programs. Colin Jones posts a number of free videos on YouTube where you can check out if his teaching style works for you. I went back and checked the archives on YouTube, and his teaching style definitely works for me, where I'm planning to get back into blackjack, which I would bet heavily on the no on that position. But if I were, I would certainly go to Blackjack Apprenticeship. But the videos that I've seen recently that seem really interesting is 5 Reasons I'm Glad Casinos Can Black Players Off, Misconceptions About Blackjack Counting, and How Important Are Card Counting Deviations. Pretty basic stuff, but well presented and accurate. If you wish to learn to play this game, Blackjack Apprenticeship is a good way to go.
I would also just add that the forum is a good place to start interacting with other players. And because it's a moderated forum, you don't get a lot of the just sort of random BS that you would find on the free forums.
Yeah, there's a lot of information behind their paywall. And if you're serious about gambling with an edge at blackjack, the paywall is very modestly priced. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the game. An additional membership, the pro membership, is sold separately for $6.95 a month or $49.95 a year if you buy it without having the gold membership, or about $3 extra a month if you do have the gold membership. Listeners can play 1,000 hands for free and try it out at videopoker.com/GWAE for Gambling with an Edge. The biggest advantage of this is that it's video poker software that corrects you on both Quick Quads and Ultimate X. If those are the games you play, this is a valuable membership package to have. Let's go back to our listener questions. How is the dream card triggered? This is a tough question because there are 2 separate versions of dream card. Same game name, different answers to the question. And they both come in versions of triple play, 5-play, 10-play, or spin poker, or a couple other variations. The older version lists on the help screen how often a dream card occurs. Now, dream card in general is a 10-coin per line game where periodically you get a dream card, which before the draw turns into the most valuable one possible. You hold it, and then you draw. Now, how frequently you get the dream card depends on the game. In Jacks or Better, you get them a lot, because 4 aces in that game pay you 125 coins. In Triple Double Bonus, you don't get them so much, because 4 aces in that game pay either 800 or 4,000. And so you don't get as many dream cards. So if the dream card was set to give you 20% of the hands, it's set up to do that randomly. And so over the next several thousand hands, 20% of them are going to get the dream card. It may be two or three in a row, and then you get a dry spell for 200 hands. You don't know how it's going to be, but over the next several thousand hands, it's going to average out to 20%. The newer version of Dream Card gives you fewer Dream Cards. But each time one is triggered, it's more valuable. What happens is when the Dream Card is triggered, in the background that you cannot see, three separate hands are dealt. The machine then gives you the one that is best of the three. The net result is you get fewer Dream Card, but the ones you do get are more valuable. And again, it will tell you in the help screen how often the dream card is triggered. All right. Next question. Do either of you ever play ordinary slot machines purely for the fun and entertainment value? After all, some of these slots have rather fun and entertaining bonus rounds. Although I'm not really a slot player, every once in a while, how high house edge be damned, I'll blow $20 just for the fun of it. For me, I say, good for you, that's not for me. I don't do that. If I ever really want to have the entertainment of seeing how they work out, I can stand behind somebody else while they have the fun. Richard, do you ever play these games?
No, never. Never. Plus, maybe they have entertaining bonus rounds, but I wouldn't know what they were, so I wouldn't even know which one to play that had the entertaining bonus round.
And I've oftentimes, at different casinos over the years, have had a good video poker game that is relatively near one of these slot machines with recurrent sound effects.
Oh, yeah.
Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah. Or there's some kitty glitter or something. Yeah. Oh, man, those are awful.
And there's the Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory, and there's a bunch of them that have the same sound effects, or some that will play Elvis music when you hit a jackpot or something, whatever it is. So, and if you're sitting there and that's the best video poker game in the casino, you hear the sound effects over and over again. So you can become a nerd. Okay, another question.
I would just add my, yes. My sucker play. I haven't done this in a long time, but when my kids were little and we were eating in the casino, we would often play a Keno ticket. And, you know, I would let the kids pick a number and my wife and all of that. And so that was the sucker play that I would occasionally make when my kids were younger. So
would you bet a whole dollar on it?
Oh, yeah. It was a whole dollar. And, you know. Yep. I would take the worst of it.
All right. Yeah. The on that subject, it was back in the late 90s. I was married to a woman named Shirley. Shirley had lots of relatives, and sometimes they would come to visit with kids. And these kids would always fill out Keno tickets, and their mom would, or their grandmother would, put up the money and they would play. And but it was the kids who were doing it. And so I would always tell them, you can't do this where I'm seated. They go, my welcome is fragile enough at some of these casinos. Having underage kids play Keno where I'm eating could be the difference to keep my welcome or not. So no. So the net effect is they did not enjoy having lunch with me, which was generally for the good. But I was a pain in the ass to these kids. A couple weeks ago, Somebody said, Bob offhandedly mentioned that he hadn't gambled since this morning. This leads to my question. Do either or both of you still, or have you ever enjoyed playing your game of choice? I've played perhaps millions of hands of video poker and still enjoy doing so. I only get to Vegas a couple times a year, so perhaps this is why I still enjoy it. So if so, what are Bob's current favorites and maybe top three variants from an enjoyment entertaining perspective? For me, it's dollar multi-strike. Video poker is hard to beat. The sounds, designs, and variants are as good as it gets for me. Thank you for what you two do. Very entertaining and informative. You guys are about as good as I can get in the podcast world. Nobody even comes close. And we do thank you for the kind words.
Thank you, yeah.
I want to read that sentence again. That's pretty good. Now, I only play games where I have the edge. My favorite is often the one with the biggest edge. And the casinos change their games and slot clubs all the time. And my welcome changes from place to place. So my favorite game is always changing it well. I do enjoy kicking the casino in the butt. I get, even though I've been doing it for decades, I still get pleasure out of that. I do not need to work, but I enjoy spending time in the casino and playing games where I have the edge. And it's just a variety of different games. Purely for fun, probably Quick Quads. Deuces Wild is fun. Ultimate X is fun when you can find one of the few pay schedules where you actually have an edge. South Point has some. Not many places can you find those. But yes, I enjoy what I do. It's still a avocation as well as a vocation. Richard.
Yeah, I still enjoy it. And I would say that over the last years, I really enjoy playing games other than blackjack. I really enjoy finding new games that can be beat. And playing other games besides blackjack. I mean, I like blackjack too. I like playing that game with an itch. But I find it more satisfying these days when, you know, I get to play some other game. You know, whether it, like in the New York Times article, finding a game of craps that could be beat, or whatever game it is, I've found those particularly enjoyable.
Yeah, I actually enjoy the learning process in new games more than actual sitting and grinding it out. So that's going to do it for the questions for this week. At the end of each show, Richard and I have been doing a recommendation. And so I've started to listening to podcasts by someone named Matthew Dix, and I'm assuming that's where Richard got the idea of recommendations every show, because that podcast does the recommendations. So mine has to do with a restaurant that I don't think I've talked about before. I prepared this before, but I don't think I've given it, and that is Sweet Tomatoes, which is also called Soup Plantation in some locales. It is a soup and salad place, and they have a number of additional things such as baked potato bar, several muffins, a pasta bar, soft serve ice cream, and such. The one we go to has a senior meal between 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. most days of the week for $8.95, including a beverage. And it's rare that I pay for food. I still play enough at casinos where I get food for free. But when I do, that's one of them. And I go to Soup Plantations, or Sweet Tomatoes, as it's called here in Vegas. Richard.
Yeah, actually, that's a place my wife and I eat at pretty frequently as well. My recommendation this week is one of my favorite podcasts is called Planet Money. And this week they had a rerun of an episode that is about the Russian hackers that were beating the aristocrat slot machines by videotaping them. And it's from the perspective of the surveillance director at Pechanga. So they interview him. And anyway, it's just an interesting show about that whole slot machine thing that went down with the Russians. And just in general, the Planet Money podcast, I would recommend. But I'm going to put a link in the show notes to that particular episode, because I think our listeners in particular will be interested in that.
Certainly I am.
And the other thing I would say is I've had a number of people contact me either on Twitter, Facebook, whatever, saying that they like the recommendations section. So I would encourage people, if you have some recommendations for us, hey, send them my way. I'm always interested in trying new things or, reading some article that caught your eye or whatever. And somebody coincidentally had pointed out this episode of Planet Money to me on Twitter and said, hey, have you heard this? And I had already planned to have it as my recommendation this week. So it sounds like some of our listeners are already listening to this particular podcast as well.
Very good. Hope you enjoyed today. If you did, you're going to get more of the same next week, because we got lots more mailbag questions to answer and no other guests scheduled. So thank you, Richard. And go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.